excited to welcome Emily to the Locate podcast. Emily is an American expat and digital marketing professional who has been living in Spain for the last 11 years. In mid-2020, during the height of the global pandemic, Emily welcomed her first child, a beautiful baby boy named Enzo. Today, we'll be chatting about her experience of being pregnant, having a baby during COVID, as well as the challenges she faced for not being able to see her family due to country border lockdown restrictions for almost a year. Emily, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for being here.
Hi, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
I'm super excited for you, and thank you so much for being open to sharing your experiences over the last year and a half. Before we dive in, I was just wondering, can you maybe just give a little background about how you came to Spain and maybe how you met your husband?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm originally from Wisconsin, and I studied Spanish at UW-Madison. And while I was there, I studied abroad in Sevilla. And contrary to popular belief, I did not fall in love while I was in Sevilla. Well, I fell in love, but I fell in love with Spain. I really fell in love with my husband. And I knew I had to come back. And so I found the bilingual teaching assistance program, the North American Language Assistant Program. And I did that after graduation for 3 years. My first year was in Almeria, and then the two following years in Cádiz. And the first year in Cádiz, I met my husband on the beach. We actually talked about this story yesterday, and we have a little discrepancy of what actually happened, but I'm confident in my version. He was on the beach with two of his friends, and I was on the beach with two of my friends, and they had this like watermelon, and I was kind of looking at them, my sunglasses, you know, very stealthily, or so I thought. And he like raised his hand and like started waving, and I just automatically, you know, turned and flipped over and was like, oh my gosh, he saw me. and he came over with one of his friends and started talking to us. The rest is history, sort of. So that was in October of 2011, and we probably started dating the spring of 2012. So it's been almost 10 years, and we moved to Barcelona for 5. And in 2018, we came back to Sevilla. So it's just been full circle, pretty much.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And so when did you get married? And then when did you find out that you were pregnant?
We got married in July of 2019. Enzo came in July of 2020. So it was a really quick turnaround. But yeah, we got married in 2019. And so, you know, just really came right in before the world came crashing down. And we knew that we always wanted kids, but it came sooner than we maybe expected. It was great for a while.
And so when did you first start to hear about COVID? Like, do you remember where you were or what you originally thought? What was that like for you?
I feel like this is probably like a similar story for a lot of people. And I think people who lived in Europe, definitely, I mean, depending on where you were in the world, I think you probably had a different view of what COVID was or wasn't until, you know, we had the perspective that we do now. But I don't think anybody thought that it was going to be what it ended up being. And I was working in an international school at the time. And I still remember, you know, we went home for Christmas, and I was just like 12 weeks pregnant. So just at the point of, you know, sort of sharing that news and whatever. And we surprised my parents, my family with the news and all of that. And we had plans, like while we were during Christmas, we had booked their tickets to come in April. We were going to do this like dream trip to Italy, my parents, my husband and I, in April. And, you know, we came back to Spain after Christmas. And I don't really remember, I honestly don't remember really starting to talk about COVID until probably February. Mm-hmm. And it was the end of February. There's like a little holiday here in Andalusia for the Dia de Andalusia. And we booked tickets to go to London. And I know for sure that there was talk about it at that point, but still, you know, we weren't concerned. We certainly weren't concerned. You know, we were on a packed plane, like to London, like no masks, no nothing. And I remember even speaking to one of my best friends in London about it. And she's very, you know, she works in the government in the UK and is very well informed. And I was like, Emma, tell me, like, what do you think? What's going on? She's like, I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal. I don't think it's, no, nobody thought it was going to be a big deal.
Of course not. Everyone thought it was just going to be a 2-week lockdown, right?
Oh, man. And I even remember when my husband's company, he works for a pharmaceutical company. And I remember when they said, everybody needs to stay home for the next 2 weeks. And I don't even think that they necessarily were to work. Like they were supposed to do what they could at home, but it wasn't like full on work from home. And I was seething because I was pregnant. I was exhausted. I was working with preschoolers He just gets to stay home and not work. And then March 13th comes or March 14th, whatever. And the rest is history. So
crazy.
Essentially, I don't think that any of us really understood the full perspective. I don't even know if we still do, but I think that it was very like everybody was taking it quite lightly for a long time.
Of course,
and I certainly did not foresee the type of lockdown that we were about to experience.
Absolutely. And so when March hit, how many months pregnant were you at that point?
So in March, I was about 6 months pregnant. And I actually, because I was working with preschoolers, I had been approved for like, I don't know what you would call it. It's like, depending on the job that you have, you're allowed or you're supposed to go off of work at a certain time, right?
Right.
Depending on how many hours on your feet, depending on how often you have to bend down, depending on how much weight you have to lift, all of this stuff. And so because I was working with preschoolers, I had been approved to go on leave just before like spring break in April.
Crazy. And so obviously when you're pregnant, there are lots of appointments you have to go to, which oftentimes, you know, your partner would come with you. What was that like having to go to the doctor? Because I know in certain countries around the world, you know, there was a lot of restrictions and obviously mask wearing. And then sometimes, you know, the partner of the woman wouldn't be able to come in with them. Did that happen with you? Like, was your husband able to go to these visits or did that change as things got worse?
I mean, obviously he was able to go to, I should have asked him, but I think he maybe went at the beginning, maybe went to one or two ultrasounds he was able to go to. I know he was definitely there when she told us the sex, but that would have been after Christmas. And like I said, there wasn't that much time between after Christmas and lockdown. You know, there was 2 months basically. So first of all, as well as I can remember, all of my appointments were pretty much suspended unless they were absolutely necessary.
Oh,
so
wow.
Like, I know I definitely had to, because this was, you know, we've been in COVID for 2 years essentially, but during this time, as you'll remember, it was like full on, like you cannot leave your house. Like there's police patrolling the streets. Like it was, it seemed, you know, like post-apocalyptic here.
Yeah, totally.
Which is something that I think a lot of people, especially from the States, and I'm not sure about Canada, but like, I don't think that they can fully wrap their heads around that, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
But so there was definitely a time, probably in like March, April, that unless it was like an absolute, you know, I had to go in for it, they didn't have me come in. And my pregnancy was like quite normal. It wasn't high risk. I didn't really have any problems. So I definitely had a couple appointments canceled. But the ones that I was able to go to, I had to go in by myself. Yeah, and my husband was not even allowed to even come into the doctor's office with me. He had to like wait physically outside of the building, obviously with a mask on, because for the longest, everybody had to wear a mask, even outside, even if you were 2 meters away. And I have one specific experience that just sort of like sums up how crazy that whole time was. And I didn't have my driver's license yet at this point. And the appointment was, you know, far enough away that I wasn't going to waddle there. Number one, we weren't allowed on the street, so I was probably going to be stopped anyways.
Right.
But so my husband, you know, drove me to the appointment, obviously, and like waited outside and whatever. And we were driving home. I was in the seat next to him, and there was a police car behind us, and he pulled us over. They pulled us over.
Oh my God.
And they get out of the car and they come up to the window and they're like, "Where are you going?" And we're like, "Well, you know, my wife is pregnant." Obviously, I was like 7 or 8 months pregnant at this point. And you know, we're coming back from a doctor's appointment. Like, here's the doctor's appointment. Like, this is a number you can call to like prove that we were there, whatever. And he's like, "Well, why can't you drive yourself? Don't you have a driver's license?" I was like, "No, I don't have a driver's license. Also, I'm hugely pregnant." So, yeah.
Safety.
Yeah. And he's like, "Well, you should be sitting in the back seat and you should be wearing a mask." And I don't deal that well with people who make ridiculous requests. Yeah. And so
Especially when this is your husband and you're living in the same household, you know?
Exactly. And I'm pregnant.
He's not your Uber driver, although in that moment, I guess he was.
But, right. Exactly. It's like, "Hello, come on, sir." You know, and so I was just like, "I'm sorry, why? Like, why? It makes no sense." And he's like, "You know, excuse me, like, don't you see what's happening out here?" I'm like, "Yes, but still, sir, you know, it didn't make any sense to me." And so like that experience was just like, you know, that is how serious it was. It was literally like the local authorities were concerned about my own husband bringing me to and from an appointment. It was just like, it was crazy. And even until right before Enzo was born, when they took me into like what's called monitores, like when they sort of like hook you up and see if you're kind of having contractions or anything, like when you're like 38 weeks pregnant, then they finally were like, yeah, he can come in with you. So that was at the very, very end. But this is in the private though. In the public, he wasn't allowed to come in with me. So
right.
It's quite different.
What was going through your mind? Because obviously when you're pregnant, you want to try to keep your stress levels pretty low as much as possible. But, you know, with this crazy situation that we were living through and to the extent still are, with the COVID situation getting worse and your, you know, due date, you know, coming up pretty quickly, what was going through your mind? And were you worried? Were you stressed? Like, what were you thinking in those moments?
I honestly, when I go back and think about it, I think I was still hopeful that like it was getting better, you know, that it was mm-hmm. going to be getting better, that things were going to change, you know, and it wasn't only me. And sometimes I was the more negative one, like, you know, saying like, there's no way, because when it was very clear that my parents weren't going to be able to come in April, which even that, it was still like, okay, like, let's just see what happens in the next 2 weeks. Like, let's just see what happens. And in the States, you know, nothing was happening at that point, essentially. Yeah. The lockdown that there was, I don't actually know even what date that started there, but it was nothing like what we were living in. And so we still had hope that that was somehow going to happen. But, you know, when that was clear that wasn't going to happen, my parents then made tickets to come in June. To be there, like, you know, for the end of June and into July for when Enzo was born. And, you know, those got canceled as well. And then they booked tickets to come in September and those got canceled as well. And it was like, I think that me as well as other people were like, no, like things are going to change. Like it's going to turn around. It's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. But I got to the point where before Enzo was born where I was like, you know what? It's okay. Like having a baby can be very stressful. And I'm the kind of person that I would rather sort of be on, you know, be alone with my husband, like, and my baby at the beginning. Like I'm not into a whole bunch of family just throwing themselves at you and just totally. Like coming in and taking over. Like that's, I'm not ready. You know, neither me nor my husband are huge fans of that. So like at the beginning, I was like, okay, you know what? It's fine. We'll have the baby. You know, we'll have him for a couple months. Then my parents will come in September and like help us, you know, get back into the routine and, you know, help us with the house or whatever. But yeah, it just never came. And so it just felt like the hits just kept on coming, you know, and every time we would try to like be positive and be like, okay, like they've booked their tickets or, you know, we've got this on the horizon. It was like, no, you don't. Something and you have happened. No control over it. And that was the most difficult part. It was like, there was no control. And I'm sure that you felt this way as well. It's just like, despite how long I've been here, I have never felt so far from home. And I've never felt so trapped in a sense. And I think that a lot of people, especially expats or people who are away from their home countries, felt that way because you've always known that if anything happened, if whatever, if you needed to get back home, you could. Yeah. And in this case, it was like, you can't and nobody can come get you. Yeah. And that was really, really tough to deal with.
Totally. Yeah. That's, it's a very sobering thought, right? Like to have that. And I mean, for you and I, Spain is our home, but you know, the US and Canada will also always be our home. And then the moment when you realize that freedom and choice to go home when you want is suddenly removed is hard. And then you layer on top of that you're pregnant and you're about to have your first child and you want to share that with your family and that's not possible. Like that's heartbreaking. That's super, super heartbreaking. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
So you mentioned previously about the slight difference between public and private healthcare. So what was your experience as an expat to give birth in Spain? Did you do so in a private hospital, in a public? What was your experience like there?
So I mostly only have good things to say, mostly, about both systems. And I did what a lot of women here will do. And I'm not sure, to be honest, because I have a bunch of like American friends as well. And a lot of them only did theirs through the private, but I also did mine through the public until the moment of birth. And I'm glad that I did because they're quite different. The approaches are a little bit different. And it's interesting to me how it's done, actually. And in the public, you basically do all of your appointments and sort of checkups and that sort of thing with a midwife. And she is the one who, you know, your very first appointment once your pregnancy is confirmed and everything is you and your husband. And at this time, we could still do this, thankfully. Like, I know that there's people who weren't able to do this, but you and your husband come in and it's about a 45-minute appointment, which is also not typical, I don't think, anywhere. Like, most doctors in the public and the private are just like, you know, let's get this over with. But your very first appointment is, you know, they go into your family history and asking about your relationship. And is this child, you know, were you looking for this child? I don't know, you can say in Spanish, but, you know, were you, you know, trying to get pregnant, essentially? Yeah. And, you know, all of these questions, which I think are really good. And it's a more human approach, I would say. And that's how I felt about the public in general. And the private was just a little bit more medical because your whole pregnancy is sort of with, it is with an OBGYN. And the day you give birth, the only time you see your OBGYN that's been like, you know, doing this whole process with you is like, essentially, I think I saw mine maybe once before I actually gave birth. And then she was there to actually deliver Enzo. But the day that you give birth, you're introduced to a midwife. And I don't know how to say the male version, but I actually had a male midwife. I'm not sure how you say that in English. But and he or she would be the person who's with you during the whole process, like while, you know, while you're dialing before you give birth. and sort of like does the whole process with you, but you've never met them before. Whereas in the public, right. That's the person who you've been sort of doing your whole pregnancy with.
Connection with.
Yeah. So I thought it was interesting, those two. But the main advantage of the private was the number of ultrasounds that you could have. And so just like having that, like, you know, monthly sort of checkup that you knew that you were going to see how baby was doing, where they were, because in the public, you only get three and you don't
for
have
the whole pregnancy.
Yeah. Wow. Maybe four, because there's one that's like specific for like malformations and that type of thing, but I'm pretty sure it's just like three.
Wow.
And that's not with your midwife. That's like, you have to go to like a separate place. With the public, all I remember is just, it's so many appointments. Like,
you'd think it'd be the opposite, you know, like with the private, you would have more appointments and the public would just be like, okay, like, let's get as many people through.
Right. Well, I think it would be the same amount of appointments either way. If you decided you only wanted to do the private, then you would have to do the same things. Although there's things that the private wouldn't cover. For example, like the whooping cough shot that all pregnant women have to get every time they're pregnant, you would have to get that in the public because it's free, you know.
Got it. Okay.
Unless you wanted to pay. But anyways, yeah, there was a lot of differences with that. But I decided to give birth in the private just because for comfort mostly. In the public at that time, I think that they were really, really, really trying to give women their own rooms because of COVID, obviously. But
right, of course.
During normal times, it's quite normal to have to share a room with somebody that's like separated by a curtain. And that was not something I was trying to do with a new baby. And, you know, the private hospital also had the, you know, like a little sort of sofa sleeper for my husband, which was really nice. And my pregnancy wasn't complicated at all, which is something that's interesting about the private versus the public system, because if you have a complicated pregnancy for any reason, most doctors would recommend that you give birth in the public because they usually, it's very interesting because they usually have, better facilities, like more, you know, better neonatal center, might have better access to like, but most people would recommend, like, if it might be complicated for anyway, they would recommend that you go through the public. Luckily, I didn't have to consider that. So, for me, it was a comfort issue at the end of the day.
Totally. And so the day that you actually did give birth, was your husband able to be in the room?
Yes. Yes, he was, thankfully. Yeah, that was never, at least at that time, this was July. So, you know, things had started opening up. And I think, to be honest, I'm not sure if there was ever a moment in Spain specifically where husbands were not allowed in the birthing room. I don't know about that. I do know that in the UK, I think there was definitely a time when husbands were not allowed in the birthing room, but Papelu was, which, like, thankfully, I don't know how somebody would do that by themselves. Obviously only one person was ever allowed, with you at the same time. So like his family, his parents and, two brothers and, their wives came to Sevilla. But exactly, but one by one, yeah, to say hi, which to me, like, that was perfect because I didn't need everybody in there all at the same time. So yeah, the only, I would say, COVID wise with the actual birth, the only real difference was that I was supposed to wear a mask. I don't think that I did in the end because I don't remember it. But I was extremely anxious about that fact before giving birth. It was literally the only thing that scared me about the whole experience
was that
I would have to wear a mask because we weren't used to that yet. And I just, it was suffocating. So anyways, but.
Absolutely. And so, okay. So Enzo born super healthy, no complications, which is great, in July, right?
Yep.
2020. And so when were you actually able to make it to the United States to see your family? And I think there was like a special exception that you were able to take advantage of. And I'm sure there was a lot of paperwork involved with that as well.
Yeah. So there was never, I think it was in January that Trump put the travel ban, if I'm not mistaken. We would have always been able to go because Pepela was my husband and was my son. I'm an American citizen. So as citizens, you know, we were always able to go, which was almost more difficult because it's like, you know, that you have the possibility to go to see your family, to like fulfill this like desperate need for them to meet your new child, but you just can't in that moment. Like you can't, I could not fathom that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just like after having a child. And again, Katie, like at that point it was like, surely the borders are gonna open up, surely, like, yeah. Spain is too dependent on tourism, like surely they're gonna open. And they never did. And my husband's paternity leave, he took, so do men have 3 months? They have four months now.
Yeah, it's either three or four, yeah.
Yeah, I think they have 4 months now. And I think my husband had four. And so he took three, but he saved one. And so what we decided, when Christmas time came around and things still hadn't changed, there was no chance of my family coming, we were basically like at a crossroads. And the choice was, because I was supposed to start work in January as well.
Oh,
that
wow.
Year.
Okay.
Things changed in my job, which is what ultimately allowed us to travel in April of 2021. But, you know, at Christmas 2020, we were sort of like, okay, either we go now, even though cases are back to being terrible, the space is kind of a mess.
And after Christmas, it'll be even worse, right? Because
after Christmas, right. And so then, you know, at that point, we had been like, we've been in it for almost a year and we knew the uncertainty. And so from my perspective, I was desperate to go home. I was desperate like to see my family. I had never spent a Christmas away from home. Like I've always gone home for Christmas. And so there was like that, you know, sadness and nostalgia and whatever, combined with obviously this huge life change that I still had not been able to share with them. But we ultimately decided, like, with the changes that happened at my work, and I ended up not going back to, you know, deciding not to go back to work in January, and Papeli still had this month of paternity leave that he was either going to use when I went back to work so Enzo could stay, you know, out of daycare for one more month, or the other option was for him to take it in April, more or less, and we could go for a whole month to the States. And so we ultimately decided, okay, we'll go to the States in April. So that was April of this year. Yep, April 2021. And it was insane, the amount of things that we had to go through. And it was not initially supposed to be April. I think our original tickets were for February. Those got canceled.
Wow.
Our next tickets were for March. Those got canceled.
Again, something that's out of your control, right? As much planning you can do.
Right.
And then at the end, it's not ultimately up to you. It's crazy.
Right. And it just felt like that loss of control, and it was really, really hard to deal with. Eventually we wised up and decided, okay, because we had been trying to book with an airline that went through Sevilla, and we eventually wised up and we're like, okay, let's take the airline that's actually going to the States right now. The only one that's actually going to the States right now, which was Delta. I think maybe Iberia or American Airlines were also traveling, but it was like those two, that was it. So if you wanted to go home, like you had to get on one of those flights. And in order to do that, we needed to go to Madrid. Now, as you remember, yeah, it was an adventure that I would like not to repeat anytime soon. So as you will remember, in Spain at various times, and to be honest, I cannot even remember when it started, when it stopped, if anything is still in place. I don't think any of it is right now, but let's see what happens after Christmas. But there were times when you were not allowed to go to another autonomous community.
Right. Yeah.
In Spain, you were not allowed to go outside of your city. You were not allowed to. There are all these, like, you know, imaginary borders that you were not allowed to cross without sufficient authority.
Documentation. Yeah, exactly.
And explanation, whatever. And so we were going to be traveling in Semana Santa when they had specifically some autonomous communities had said, no, like, you can't come in or out, whatever. And so the amount of calls, when we finally realized that these flights were actually going to happen, the amount of calls that I did to, you know, the Department of Traffic, to the train station, to the airline, like, hours I spent on the phone with them, like, confirming and reconfirming and getting redirected to other people who could possibly confirm it. Like, nobody wanted to tell me
if
what I was saying was correct, because nobody wanted it to be wrong.
Yeah.
And they kept, like, pointing me to somebody else. So eventually, what we had to do was take a train from Sevilla to Madrid. We took with us, because we didn't know if we were going to come across, on the news they were showing us that there were police in the train station checking people's documentation, where they were coming from, why they were going. We were not even sure if we were allowed to stay the night in Madrid. Obviously, we were just there for transit, but our flight left at 6 a.m, so there was no possible way for us to get to Madrid the same day. We had to stop. And we weren't sure if legally we were allowed to do that. Luckily, we didn't come in contact with any police officers on that journey, but we brought with us, you know, all of the documentation from the States, everything. You know, we brought with us our libro de familia, with our marriage registry, our marriage certificate translated, our baby's birth certificate, everything. We brought our rental contract with us so that when we came back, we would be, if anybody checked, like, they would know that that's where our residence was. So we would be allowed back into Sevilla. Wow. So the list of documents was dizzying. And, you know, traveling with, at the time he was 9 months old, traveling internationally with a 9 month old is tough for anybody. But to have that extra, like, anxiety, because it was anxiety of, do I have all the papers? Are they going to let us in? Until we literally were in line for the flight, I don't think either one of us fully believed that we were going to go. Wow. So,
because all you needed was one person to be like, sorry, no, and just deny you boarding the flight, right? It's
which
just
they almost did to my husband, because ESTAs, which are what you need to get into the States anytime, you know, anyone who comes on a tourist visa, at least from Europe, needs to have an ESTA. I'm not positive on anywhere else, I'm pretty sure. But anyways, you need to have an ESTA. And so my husband had an ESTA, but ESTAs were not valid during that time, because an ESTA is a tourist visa.
And tourists weren't allowed.
Exactly. And so we get to the check-in counter and she's like, okay, show me your ESTA. And he opens it and it says, like, your ESTA has been canceled. And he's like, no. This, like, this is valid. It showed me it's been valid. And of course, like, my heart is just pounding in my chest. And I'm feeling, and, like, God bless him. Like, I was, like, thinking to myself, like, oh my gosh, you messed this up. You have messed it up, because they did that to everybody. Like, he literally got an email at midnight. We got to the airport at 4 a.m. He got an email at midnight saying that his ESTA had been canceled. And I was like, what? And it turns out that's, you know, the United States did that to everybody. And I've spoken with other women who've gone with their husbands, and they do that to everybody because they're not valid. But the airline has to, you know, manually call them. I don't know who they call. They have to call them and they have to manually say, okay, yes, this person is a long-term partner. You know, this American citizen's husband, this American citizen's father, like, they have permission to fly. But because it was, like, so, like, kind of new, the airline didn't know that. So we were, like, at the front desk for probably, it felt like an hour, but it was probably 15 minutes. And she was like, I don't know why. I don't know why they're not letting you board. I don't know why they're not giving me your ticket. And so, yeah, it was very stressful. And then on top of it, when we got to the United States, and I had other friends who went to the States, and I don't know why nobody let me know this, but when we got to the United States, that we're going through border control. Like, okay, we're finally here. Like, it's finally happening. My sister's waiting for us. Like, we're about to be here. And the border control's like, okay, so what's your visa, sir? And, you know, it's my husband. He's like, well, no, like, I'm her husband. So, you know, I'm whatever. And he's like, okay, all right. And he's like looking through our papers. He's like, all right, well, you're going to have to come over here. And he says to me, he's like, you can wait for him. You and your son can wait for him in baggage claim if you want. I'm like, no, yeah. Like, I don't know where you're going. I don't know what, you know, no, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So went into this, you know, area, which was for people who were like being questioned about their visas and everything. Nobody said anything to us. Nobody told us like how long it was going to be.
Where finally, in the U.S. is this happening? Which airport?
In Chicago.
Okay.
And like I said, I think of all of this happened because it was so new. And so people were not, border control was not used to like allowing anybody in who wasn't an American citizen or who had a specific visa. So yeah, you know, they took him into this room and we were just waiting for a while. And eventually somebody comes out and he's like, yeah, I'm sorry to keep you guys waiting. Like, everything's fine, but we just have to like.
What a relief. Everything's fine. It's like, okay, thanks.
Let us know from the beginning, like, don't worry, nothing's wrong. You're not going to get sent back to Spain. It's just that we have to manually approve your ESTA, which is what they were doing or whatever.
Okay.
But it's like, oh my gosh. So it was quite an emotionally charged journey.
And so when you finally got through all of that after the hours of traveling, the documentation, the stress, what was that moment like when you finally got out of the car and you saw your family? And you actually filmed this and shared it on social media. And I was like crying watching it because it's such a beautiful moment. But for you, what did that feel like?
I don't even know. I honestly don't even think that I could put it into words. It was interesting because, you know, my sister, we really tried to like plan it to be COVID friendly. And did my parents have their vaccinations at that point? I don't even remember if they did. I don't think that they, maybe they did. I don't remember. Anyways, but we really tried to be very, very conscious. My sister picked us up first. She works in healthcare, so she was fully vaccinated, but, you know, she was fully masked, and she took us home for a couple of days before we went up to see my parents. They live about 2 hours north of where she lives, and so that we could get tested and just be safe for that. So it was an interesting sensation because it was like, okay, when I saw my sister, it was just this like huge relief, you know, just all this like pent up tension and anxiety and stress and, you know, just all of these emotions that you can't even really pinpoint what they are. They're just building up inside of you. And when you see, and my sister for me, she's just like my person, you know, she's that person for me. And so when I finally saw her and like, she finally saw her nephew, it was like, yeah. And when you sent me these questions, I was like, oh God, I'm going to get emotional. But it was a very, very emotional encounter. But like I said, since we had that couple of days between when we stayed with my sister and brother-in-law to when we saw my parents, it was interesting because it was like, we were already home. Like, we were already there and we knew that we were going to be seeing them soon. And when we finally did, it was just surreal, you know. Mm-hmm. it was surreal. It was absolutely surreal. And yeah, I wish I could be more eloquent about it, but
it was such a special moment just seeing it on video. It was so beautiful, you know, to just see that moment of you guys reuniting. It was so wonderful. I was so thrilled for you because I knew what you had to go through to get through that, you know. So
I know. Every time I see somebody and at the end of the day, I just like, people, a lot of my friends would talk to me during this time, like, oh my gosh, I can't imagine like being pregnant during this time and not seeing your family and having a baby and whatever. And I was like, but you know what, it's not just me, it's everybody, and everybody has gone through something awful or, you know, not ideal. People have, I mean, in worst case scenarios, people have lost their family members. They've not been able to go to their funerals. They've not been able to say goodbye, you know, in less serious, but still life, you know, changing ways. People haven't gone to their high school graduation. They haven't gone to their college graduation. They haven't.
Yeah. They've been robbed of these experiences, right? That like mark your life. Yeah,
exactly. And so, yeah, but it was incredible. The culmination of all of those feelings and the realization of finally being able to introduce Enzo to that side of his family.
Totally. Oh, so lovely. So wrapping things up a little bit, do you have any advice for anyone who is, first of all, thinking of expecting their first child or, you know, the first time they've maybe ever had to have birth in Spain or abroad? Do you have any piece of advice or recommendations for them?
Yeah, I would say if you can, and if your language skills are up to par in this way, be an advocate for yourself as much as possible. Obviously, I think that that's a piece of advice for anybody giving birth anywhere, because there are certain things that I would change about my birth and I wish that I had been a better advocate for myself about. But I think if you're able to be an advocate for yourself, you need to be, have your, you know, your thoughts written down, like your bottom lines written down, especially for your birth. In Spain, there is a birth plan that you can have printed out and write specifically like what you want, what you don't want. You can make your own if you want to. In my situation, I wouldn't say, you know, nobody asked me for it and it was just sort of a blur of a moment. If I have a second child, it's something I would definitely do. Just be an advocate for myself and be like, listen, this is what I want. Please make sure that this happens, and if it doesn't, tell me why, you know. And if you can't, and if you don't feel like your language skills maybe are up to snuff, obviously seek out possible doctors in your area who have good language skills. In Sevilla I really recommend the group expat moms in Seville, I think it's called, and women will write on there all the time, you know, frequently about, like, do you know an English-speaking gynecologist, an English-speaking consult, and if that, and there's many, you know, so if that exists in Seville, I know that it exists in other places in Spain, so seek that out, and use your partner, hopefully, to help you through it, and get other opinions. I would say get other opinions, obviously, from people who've done it before, you know, in your area, especially because people have asked me before if I have recommendations on private versus public. And honestly, it really just depends on your birth, your pregnancy, number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, where you are, because you could have an amazing public hospital wherever you are, and the private one is not as good or doesn't have as good of a reputation. And I think it's very, very specific. So seek out expat groups on Facebook, perhaps. And yeah, those would be my prime piece of advice. And just, you know, take it as easy as you can and give yourself grace, because it's not an easy experience in any country. And it's not your own language. It's all the more difficult. So give yourself grace with that.
Absolutely. That's really great advice. Thank you for sharing. Well, thank you so much for your time today and sharing, you know, such personal things and such heartwarming stories and the challenges and struggle and stress that you had to go through to bring Enzo into the world. I really appreciate you sharing that. If our listeners would like to connect with you, what would be the best place for them to do that?
I would say the best place to connect with me is probably through Instagram with my account, This Is The Milk, with a period, full stop between each word. That's probably the easiest place to get at me. And through there, if they want to have a look at the blog, they'll be able to do that as well. So perfect. I'd love to hear from anybody who's going to be welcoming a baby soon or has any questions for me.
Amazing. Well, I'll be sure to include that in the show notes so people can find you on Instagram. And yeah, thank you again so much. And it was lovely chatting with you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.